let's go back to the beginning of the prayer. The Kabbalists, especially the Shalom HaKadosh, but especially Hasidus, really explains this whole idea of Hashem being king. Before there's anything, how could you be king? It says, Ein Melech B'lo Yam. There's no nation, there's no citizen, they can't be king. So what do you mean Hashem is king? So much so that you say he actually reigned. Hashem Molach, he actually reigned. So what does it mean? So you have two types of kingdom. You have two types of sovereignty. You have a king who's an equal with everyone else, and then the subjects decide to choose him as their king. And it's their choosing that makes him king, that elevates. Because they chose him, now they put him on a pedestal. You're the king, you're sitting on the throne, you're our king, you're wearing the crown, we're subject to you, we bow down to you. So their crowning him as their king, appointing him as their king, elevates him into the status of king. But then you have a true king. A true king is someone who's elevated before he was king. The Torah describes, the Tanakh describes the first Jewish king, Shaul. Before he became king, he was head and shoulders above everyone else. Not just physically, also physically, but also spiritually. He was just head and shoulders above everyone else. He was on a different level. He was essentially transcendent and beyond everyone else. So there, when the people make him into a king, the whole purpose of making him into a king is not to elevate him. He's already elevated. The whole purpose of making him a king is to draw him down, to bring him closer to the people. He should have some connection to the people. He should become their leader and to guide them and to lead them, to be involved with them, because he's so beyond them, he has no interest. He's beyond being king over them. He's busy with himself. He's elevated on his own. By making him king, now suddenly he creates a connection to the people. Now the attribute of being a king is different than any other attribute that we have. All the other attributes that we have, like love, kindness, being strict and tough and strong, and these attributes characterize us as, you know, we can be alone and still be loving. Now, there's no one to love, but I am a loving person. I want someone to love. Even if there's no one around, I can be a loving person. I want to love. I just don't have anyone to bestow that loving kindness to. Like Avram Avinu. Avram, after circumcision, and there was a chamsan, there was such a heat wave, that 3 days went by, he didn't have a single guest. He was in pain. Because he was so full of love, he wanted to love, he wanted to do a kindness, there was no one to receive it. But he experienced that love. Royalty, the attribute of royalty, the attribute of sovereignty, by definition, you can't be king over yourself. I mean, if you're Robinson Crusoe, you're not going to sit on an island and coronate yourself and put a crown on your head. You can't be king over yourself. By definition, the desire to be king means to be a king over others. Now, you can't be king over animals or over, you know, if you're a shepherd and you have 1 million sheep, it doesn't make you king. A king is if you're a king over subjects that are separate from you, but you're human and they're human. So it's meaningful that they are your subjects, that they subject themselves to you. It's meaningful, and that's why it awakens within you the desire to be king. When the king sees that people are bowing down to him and they want him to be their king and their leader, so that awakens within himself, that awakens the desire to be their king. But unless that person deep down had or thought about it before he had this revealed desire to be king of others, he just had a thought that, you know, it would be a nice idea to be king. Now, it's just a thought at that point. There's nobody around, no one is making him king, no one appointed him as king, no one is bowing down to him, no one asked him to be king. But just his initial, for himself, he thought it would be a nice thing to be king. But there's nothing practical, it's just conceptual. A desire. I desire to be king. But nothing happens. But then when the people come and request the person to be king, the king to be king, then that desire is awakened, that desire is revealed. And that desire now becomes actual. That potential now becomes actualized. And now he has a full-fledged desire. Now it's revealed. And now he becomes king and he wears the crown and he leads the country and he leads the people. and he's involved in their lives. And so this revealed desire only comes because before that, the king had a thought about being king. If he didn't have it within him, this attribute of sovereignty, if it wasn't part of himself, this attribute of sovereignty, then even the request for him to be king, it wouldn't mean anything. It wouldn't awaken anything within him. It's only because he has it in, it's part of his makeup, he has it. He thought about this desire to himself. And he liked the idea. Then when it's actualized, when the people actually come and bow down to him and ask him and request him to be, that he should be their sovereign, then he accepts. Then it becomes full-fledged, full-blown, open and revealed. And then it becomes a desire, and he agrees, and he becomes, and he accepts, and he accepts the coronation, and he becomes their king in actuality. But Chassidus says it even goes even deeper than that. That being king is so much a part of your makeup that even before you even had a thought, a private thought, before you even entertained the thought that, you know, yeah, I want to be king, even before you even had a thought, you yourself don't even know how deeply rooted it is, and it's part of your makeup. It's part of your essence. That deep down, you have a desire to be king. And it's only because of that deep desire that you have to be king. That's why you even entertain the thought, you know, I want to be king. And then when the people subjected themselves to the king, then it brought this thought out into the open, and now it becomes a full-fledged, full-blown desire. So you have three stages, three levels. You had the desire, which was like part of your essence. Then you had the desire where you thought about it, but then it just remained a thought. You didn't do anything about it. Nothing happened. It's just a thought. You entertained, you know, it'd be nice. And then when it actually is revealed and is implemented. For example, an analogy to that is the desire of a person to build a house, to have a house. So you have the open, full-fledged desire. You want to have a home. You want to have your own home. You want to build it. You want to buy it. You want to acquire it. You want to have your own home. When it's a full-fledged desire, you go out and purchase it. You go out and build it. You go out and every part of you is engaged. You use your mind and you speak with the architect and you hire and you supervise and you're arranging and orchestrating and designing and figuring it out and getting it built. So you have the open, revealed, full-fledged desire, I want to have a house. I want to build a house. But where did this desire start? It started much earlier. It was preceded by a general desire. You know, you thought one day I would like to have a house. But yet, it wasn't practical. You didn't do anything about it. It wasn't like, okay, you immediately started hiring the architect and started planning. You just had a thought, you know, I would like to have a house. It's an important part of my life. I would like to have a house. And therefore, when the right day came, and suddenly that desire became an open and revealed desire, a full-fledged, full-blown desire, which engages you, and then you implement it and you make it happen. You make it into a reality, turn it into a reality. But the truth is, it goes even deeper than that. The Talmud says, "Mi she'ein lebayis ein adam." A person who doesn't have a house is not a person. So much so that it's one of the three things that are decreed in heaven before the person is even born. 40 days before the formation of the child, it's already decreed. Your house you're going to buy, the wife you're going to marry, and the field you're going to work. Because this is an essential part of you. Without that, you're not created. Without that, you're not formed. Without that, you're not born. The desire to have a house is so deeply rooted. It's not just for the practical. The practical purposes of having enough money. I could live in a hotel all my life. Wouldn't it be fun every day, a different hotel? Travel, hotel. You can eat in a restaurant. Why do I need a home? There's a deep-rooted desire that we can't even explain rationally or logically. It's just a deep-rooted desire that I have to own a piece of this world, a portion of this world has to belong to me. This is my home. This is where I feel at home. This is my home. It's mine. It's not a hotel. It's not a restaurant. It's not. It's a home. And it's so much a part of my makeup. It's so deeply rooted that even before I even entertained the thought of having a home. It was already part of my makeup. It was already so deeply rooted that this is part of who I am, and I need this, and I want this. I myself didn't even know that. But that's the reality. And as a result of that deep-rooted desire to have a home, that's why one day it popped into my head, you know, I would like to have a home. It would be a nice idea. And then many years can go by until it actually happens, until you actually implement it. But that desire started. At first, it started in the essence of the person without the person even being aware of it at all. Then, when you had the thought, you know, I'd like to have a home, but it was far from practicality, it was far from any implementation, it was just a thought. And then when you were ready, then, oh, this thought and this desire becomes an open, revealed, full-fledged, full-blown desire, fully engaging you until you actually implement it and carry it out and turn it into a reality. And that's what he's referring to here. Hashem desire to be king. So there is the desire, Hashem's desire to be king, as a result of our beseeching him to be king, of our bowing down to Hashem to be king, of our accepting upon ourselves Hashem's sovereignty. So then Hashem is king. That's already the revealed, when Hashem is revealed as a king, when he's called a king. Hashem Melech Shmoy Nikra, he's called a king. But this desire to be king started even before he actually desired and was fully engaged in creating the world. B'terem kol yitzur nivra, before anything was even created. Ola b'rtzoyna na'emlech, Hashem had a thought, you know, I want to be king. It's like the remote thought that we have. I want to have a house with a king. Yeah, I would like to be king. But it's beyond, it's before there are any subjects, before there's anything revealed. But the truth is even deeper than that. This is referring to Asher Malach Uteren Kol, referring to the desire that's part of the core and part of the essence that Hashem desired to be a king. It's part of Hashem's essence. Hashem wants to be king. Why do you think we have such a deep desire to have a home? Why is it so deeply rooted in us? Because Hashem has a deep desire to have a home, to have a dwelling place for Hashem in this world. This world should be his home. So Hashem has the deepest desire in his core and his essence to be king. And that's why he says Hashem creates the world b'cheftzei koil. Hashem desired, had a deep desire to be king. We don't know why. There's no rhyme, there's no reason. Because to Hashem nothing exists. What's the meaning of Hashem being king at all? It's one thing for a human being gets excited if his subjects bow down to him. It's very exciting. That someone who's outside of you is not your child, is not your minister, is not close to you, someone who's distant from you, not on the same level as you, and he bows down to you, he's willing to do whatever you ask him to do. That's very exciting. I'm a king over people. That's a very exciting thing. But to Hashem, there's no one to bow down to him. There's no subjects, there's no people, there's nothing. All there is Hashem. So why does Hashem get excited? Why would Hashem get excited about the concept of being king? It makes no sense to us. Although we feel separate from Hashem and we feel apart from Hashem, but the reality is we're not separate, we're not apart. It's almost a delusion. The truth is, even while we're experiencing ourselves as being separate and apart from Hashem, the reality is we're not separate, we're not apart. All there is Hashem, and nothing really exists besides Hashem. So what meaning does it have that we accept Hashem as our king and Hashem gets excited about that? So the whole thing makes no sense to us. But we know this is what Hashem desired. Not only desired, but Cheftze Koil, Hashem desired this with a tremendous desire. Nisave, Hashem had a big taiva. Hashem had a big, tremendous desire. This means so much to Hashem. Hashem desires this and wants it so much. And that's why that's the opening of Adonai Olam. He's trying to explain this relationship, how deep the relationship that we have to Hashem is. Not like those who think, you know, we're nothing. We're insignificant. So to Hashem, none of this matters. Mitzvot are not for Hashem. It's for us. Prayer, it's not for Hashem. It's for us. Hashem doesn't need our prayer. Hashem is perfect. He's not missing anything. He's not lacking anything. He needs our prayer. He needs our service. He needs our mitzvahs. He needs our Torah. He needs our improving ourselves, changing ourselves, disciplining ourselves, restraining ourselves. To Hashem, none of this matters. It's for our benefit. Hashem is nice. So He wants to give us something that works, that's good for us. He says, no. This desire to be king, which creates us, it's Hashem's kingdom and sovereignty that creates us and creates time and space and us, and this whole world that we live in, we operate in, where we feel separate and apart and independent, and we accept, by accepting Hashem, Hashem responds to our acceptance, and it's meaningful to Hashem, and Hashem desires it, and He wants it. This desire to be king is so deep. Hashem molach b'terem kol yitzur nivra, ultimately the very essence of Hashem. Not only the part of Hashem that has no ending, not only the part of Hashem, b'li tachlis, the infinite light which has no ending, b'li reishis, the essence of Hashem that has no beginning. The essence of Hashem, in the essence of Hashem, this is so deeply rooted in Hashem, this desire to be king. So Hashem's connection with us is so deeply rooted, there's no longer this gap or this chasm, infinite chasm between us and Hashem. Hashem is so remote. Hashem is so infinite. Hashem is so transcendent. Hashem is so undefined. What possible connection do we have to Hashem? On the contrary, this very core and essence of Hashem, it's beyond, not only the beyond, before the tzimtzum, before the contraction, and not only the infinite light before the contraction, the essence of Hashem, the very essence of Hashem, there is rooted. That's where it's rooted, this desire to be king. Therefore, Hashem li, Hashem is with me. V'lo yira, I'm not afraid. As Rabbi Elezer, the Baal Shem Tov's father, told the Baal Shem Tov, he became an orphan, lost both his mother and his father at a tender age, 5 years old, 4 or 5 years old, and on his deathbed, Rabbi Elezer calls his little boy, Rabbi Yisrael, his only child. And he tells him, Yisrael, don't be afraid of anything. Only of Hashem Himself. When you realize Hashem li, Hashem is with me, the essence of Hashem is with me, Hashem is my refuge, Hashem's divine providence, Hashem is with me, then I'm not afraid of anything. And therefore I'm always joyful. How can I not be joyful if Hashem is with me? I'm so close to Hashem. I'm singing and dancing, I'm joyful. That's the greatest fulfillment, the greatest request that I can have, and the greatest fulfillment of my request is that I'm with Hashem. Hashem li. Hashem is my master. I'm His servant. Personal relationship, personal connection. I matter to Hashem. Everything matters. Not only my soul, my body. Im ruchi gviyasi. Not only my ruchi gviyasi, my body. Everything that happens to me. When I'm awake, when I'm asleep. Everything that happens to me. In my distress. Everything that happens to me, Hashem is with me. Hashem is my Redeemer. This Hashem, this lofty, infinite Hashem, has no beginning and no end. Hashem is with me. The question that remains is, if this, when we say Hashem was king, it's referring to the desire that Hashem has as part of Hashem's essence, even beyond the desire that Hashem had thought about being king. Allah b'rtzayne, ano emlech, even beyond that. What we call Ratzon HaMuchlet, it's part of Hashem's essence that He wants to be king. But we say Hashem Malach means He was actually king. He reigned, He ruled. Not the desire to be king or the will to be king. Hashem Malach, He actually was king. So how could you be king b'terem kol yitzur nivra before anyone was created? So the Rebbe Rashab once said, he said, when it says Ein Melech B'lo Yam, we have to read it in, yes. There is Melech B'loyam. There could be a king without a nation. Hashem could be a king without anyone. Because Hashem is king without anyone. He is really, essentially, without anyone. Even when He is king, there really isn't anyone. Melech B'loyam, Hashem on His own, He wanted to be king, and because He wanted to be king, He creates everyone to be king. But when you say Hashem Malach, means He actually ruled. He actually was a sovereign. Over who? And this is where the analogy between a person and Hashem falls apart. When we entertain the thought, I want to build a house, I want to be a king. And then we said there's even a desire that comes, it's even deeper rooted than that. That's deeply rooted in the essence, in the core and essence of your soul. And you're not even aware. And that's why you entertain the thought, I want to be king, I want to build a house, and then it becomes an open and revealed desire. When you just have that, just having that desire doesn't do anything. Even when you entertain the thought, I want to be king, nothing happens, or I want to build a house, it's just a thought. Years can go by and nothing happens. It's only later on when the people come and beg you and ask you and crown you as the king, then because I already had that desire, because I had that core and essential desire to be king, therefore now I accept and it comes out and it becomes an open and revealed desire. But Hashem is different. When Hashem desires something, it happens immediately. By us, there's a gap between potential and actual. Something could be potential and can never be realized. There's potential and it's never realized. It doesn't happen. By Hashem, there's no such gap. Every potential becomes actual. There's nothing stopping Hashem. So the moment Hashem entertains the thought, I want to be king, or the thought that Hashem has in his essence to be king, then immediately there are subjects, there's everything. The only difference is that there, it's not separate from Hashem. There's nothing separate from Hashem. When Hashem desired and it became a full-blown, a full-fledged, open and revealed desire to be king, then the attribute of kingdom creates subjects that feel apart, separate, independent, creation, Yitzur, Nivra, we're created, we feel apart, we feel separate from Hashem, and then we bow down to Hashem and we willingly accept Hashem's sovereignty to be his servants and to accept his mitzvahs and to do his will. But when Hashem thought, I want to be king, or even deeper than that, the essential desire, the Ratzon HaMuchlet that Hashem has in his essence to be king, and it's immediately effective, so he becomes king, but they're not separate, there's no separation. So he's king, but the question is, there's no separation, how could you be king? By definition, Ein Mele B'lo Yam. Am means a separate, apart. Am is a nation, people that are separate from the king. Am comes from the word oimemes, like dimmed coals. It's like a dim, it's distant from the king. You can't be king over your own children, you can't be king over your own ministers, you can be king over those who are far from you, are distant from you, not on the same level as you, not your equals. You can't be king over your equals, you can be king over someone who are distant from you. So when Hashem desires, there's an open and revealed desire to be king, and he creates a world of subjects that feel created, beings that feel separate and apart and independent, then it would make sense you could be king over them. But when you say that Hashem desired to be king, he entertained the thought to be king, or in his essence is there is this desire to be king, and that desire is immediately effective and there are subjects, but if they're not apart and not separate, it's like being king over yourself. You're being a king over yourself, or being king over your minister, being king over your children. If there's no separation, how can you be king? But the answer is yes, there is melech b'loya, because it depends what kind of king it is. A regular king is more or less the same as his peers, and by crowning him, they elevate him and they make him into a king. They elevate him. Now he becomes the king. Then you have a king who's essentially a king, who's essentially elevated. He's alone, he's elevated. He's just above and beyond everyone around him. And being king only brings him closer to the people. Before he was king, he had no connection. By coronating as king, now he becomes closer to the people. So this level of a king, you can even be a king over ministers, you can be a king over children, over ministers. Because the king is lofty, the king is on his own, he's lofty, he's apart, beyond. And by being king, now suddenly he has a connection that draws him closer to the people. So that could be even over his children, over his ministers. So that's what he says, Hashem Molech. Hashem actually was king. Because even though on that level, there's nothing apart from Hashem, everything is one with Hashem, everything feels like one with Hashem. There's no feeling of separation and dependence. Everyone experiences themselves as being totally one with Hashem. But Hashem is essentially lofty and transcendent and beyond. And therefore, by being king, he draws himself closer so he can be king even over those who are close to him, even those who are the example of his children, the ministers. And yet he's king. He actually is king. He's sovereign. You know, the Rebbe is a good example. The Rebbe was like, even before he became Rebbe, before he became like king and leader and he was essentially like above. He was like to himself, very quiet, very to himself, but he was like in a different world. He didn't really have much to do, didn't have much of a relationship, a connection to those around him. He lived in his own world. He was like in a different universe, different world. He was essentially uplifted. He was busy with himself, and he could have been busy the rest of his life with himself. He didn't want it. Like Moshe Rabbeinu, Hashem had to fight with Moshe, wrestle with Moshe for 7 days. He didn't want to become king. Moshe was the first king. Halachically, Moshe is considered the king. Moshe didn't want to be king. He didn't need it. He didn't want it. He's not interested. Moshe is busy. He's a shepherd. He's communing with Hashem. He's happy. He's entertaining himself. He doesn't need that. He has no relationship, no connection to the so much greater beyond. So by being king, he had to lower himself. He had to being king means he has to bring himself closer to the people, bring himself closer to be their king and to guide them and their shepherd and to be involved with them and to be engaged with them. So if a king is lofty, is so lofty in his own right, so even to be king over his own children and ministers, he also has to be a king. He could be a king. He has to draw himself closer to them and be close to them. Otherwise, he's lofty and beyond. So in Melech Bileam, it could be that type of king, to be a king Bileam. Because he's lofty, therefore he can even be a king over those who are close to him. So that's why Malach B'Terem Kol Tzuna, even B'Terem Kol Tzuna Nivra, before there was a creation. Because Hashem desired, he entertained the thought to be king, and it's even deeper than that, it's rooted even in the essence of Hashem. But Hashem, there's no gap between potential and actual. So if Hashem has such a desire, there's an immediate effect. But they're not separate. There's no separation. They're not apart. But nevertheless, Hashem could be king and he could reign. So Hashem Malach V'Terem Kol. Okay, these are very deep concepts. But next week we'll get to the Akedah.